1962, New York City. In the Estée Lauder offices, Leonard Lauder gazes at a glossy black and white advertising mock-up the size of a magazine centerfold. It shows a dark-haired woman, eyes locked forward, wearing a flirty smile, and of course, pristine makeup. After years of watching and learning from his mother, Lauder's all grown up and taking a greater role in the family business. He's now a confident 29-year-old former U.S. Navy lieutenant with dark hair and a dazzling smile, and he's not afraid to speak his mind. Sitting next to him is 37-year-old June Lehman. She's come to Estée Lauder from overseeing advertising at Bergdorf Goodman, New York's swankiest department store. Business at Estée Lauder is good and poised to do even better. The company recently landed its first international accounts, including London's legendary Harrods department store. And Lehman, with her marketing background, has just the expertise to help the Lauders continue to grow their profile. Lauder looks up from the ad.
I'm just not sure. Is black and white the right approach? The evening makeup collection is all about color.
Lehman's ready with an answer.
Leonard, you know black and white was all we could afford for a campaign of this size. But the photos are stunning. A two-page spread in all of the big glossies will absolutely catch people's attention.
It is sleek. Classy.
Exactly. Revlon's ads are in-your-face sexy. This is elegant.
Lauder walks to his desk. He picks up an ornate box wrapped in intricately textured paper. He opens it to reveal an array of 30 lipsticks, eyeshadows, and blush in bold nighttime shades. It's Estée Lauder's forthcoming evening makeup collection. Lauder marvels at the rich hues. The products are beautiful.
The box alone will be a collector's item.
Lauder looks conflicted.
What's wrong?
We have a lot riding on this. A makeup line meant to be worn only at night? It's never been done. This was my idea, and if it fails, it'll be on my shoulders.
But you'll also get all the credit if it succeeds. It will mean women buying twice as much makeup. A whole line for daytime and another for night.
Later that year, the collection launches in the U.S. and Europe. The company's Re-Nutriv lipstick and its evening makeup collection become the flagship products in both markets. By selling makeup in showy packaging and exclusively in high-end stores, Estée Lauder solidifies its reputation as the market's most prestigious makeup brand. Revlon founder Charles Revson takes notice. Within months, the company launches its own evening makeup collection. And just like that, their longtime rivalry is in the spotlight. Estée Lauder is growing quickly, but Revlon still dominates in reach and revenue. The smaller brand will need a steady churn of innovations to compete. Luckily, the company's new leader is plotting a killer makeover.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. In our last episode, the young founders of Estee Lauder and L'Oreal exploited major gaps in the beauty market. Estee Lauder targeted women seeking face cream to revitalize their skin, and L'Oreal's Eugène Schueller focused on women's hair, creating the first synthetic dye. With their lucrative niches, it was only a matter of time before they each attracted competitors. Now, at the dawn of the 1960s, in an increasingly cutthroat market, both companies must stay one step ahead of their challengers. This is Episode 3, Skin in the Game. Paris. Leonard Lauder is asleep in a posh hotel room with a view of the night skyline. The Eiffel Tower glimmers in the distance. He fumbles for the phone. Hello? It's Warner Byram, a regional manager based in Chicago.
I'm sorry to call so late, but sir, we have a problem. It's the Bonwit Teller account.
Lauder sits up in bed, suddenly wide awake.
The store in the Sears Tower?
Yes, sir. As you know, it's the department store's grand opening tomorrow, and we've secured a great counter location, right inside the main entrance.
I know. I negotiated for it months ago. So, what's the problem?
Well, it seems Charles Revson went to the store today, sir. He saw our counter, got on the phone, and now the president of Bonwit Teller is giving it to him instead.
That snake.
I don't know how he did it.
Oh, I do. Revson has the president of Bonwit onto his yacht all the time. They're old pals.
Our counter location isn't specified in our contract with the store. I'm not sure how we can fight this.
Okay. Listen up. Here's what I want you to do. Go down to the store right now. Be there when the store opens and go to the counter. It's already stocked with our products. No one can move them if you don't let them, okay? Guard that spot and don't leave. Handcuff yourself to the counter if you have to.
Yes, sir. I'll see to it.
Byram rounds up a few employees, and they camp outside Bonwit Teller overnight. When the store opens the next morning, they rush for the makeup counter, outmaneuvering the Revlon lackeys. The rest of the opening goes off without a hitch. And just like that, Estee Lauder has another very profitable counter in a major American city. Estee Lauder is growing quickly. But their sales numbers don't compare with Revlon, the number one company in the U.S. Revlon is even beating out Avon, which is seemingly everywhere, even knocking on people's doors. Instead, Estee Lauder turns its small size and limited distribution into an advantage. Their products are exclusive and expensive, available only in high-end department stores and boutiques. These retailers favor Lauder over Revlon and its drugstore-friendly product line. The allure of a loyal, more upscale customer base allows Estee Lauder to negotiate stipulations, like the prime counter locations that Leonard holds so dear. Thanks to the success of their makeup and fragrance lines, as well as groundbreaking marketing tactics like free samples and gifts with purchase, Estee Lauder is on fire. But the Lauders know this victory will be short-lived if they don't develop a new secret weapon. They need to create something Revson hasn't thought of yet. And Leonard Lauder has an idea. 1964, New York City, the Estee Lauder offices. Estee and her son Leonard are enjoying a cup of coffee as they peruse the company's sales figures. Ever since Estee brought her son Leonard into the business in 1958,
They've worked side by side. It's been a profitable collaboration. Este thumps the papers down triumphantly.
We're officially the fastest-growing beauty brand in the United States.
But Leonard looks far less exuberant than his mother.
We have a problem. Our growth was only 24% this month, and we used to grow by 40%. Retailers are used to our products flying off the shelves. They'll start questioning our products if sales plateau. We need to expand.
Este looks skeptical.
I don't want to expand our distribution. Exclusivity is key to our brand identity. We only sell in the best places.
I get it, and I agree. But I have an idea. I just don't know if you're going to like it.
Please, enlighten me.
Leonard smiles with excitement. We launch a new brand. It's always been one of my dreams.
Leonard, we're already deep in the trenches with Revlon. You want to cannibalize our business by competing with ourselves? And why do we need a new brand? Estee Lauder is perfect as it is.
Okay, just listen for a minute. I've noticed something lately. Our customers are paying more attention to skincare. They're worried about their sensitive skin, but also careful about how they spend.
Leonard, there are already hypoallergenic products on the market.
Not at our quality and price point.
I don't like it. If we create a new allergy-tested brand, aren't we implying something is wrong with the products we already have? That they're somehow inferior? Our customers will be confused.
Leonard shakes his head.
I don't think they will. So many women have sensitive skin. No one is catering to them in high-end stores. We can reach a whole new segment of the market. Women who might have shied away from makeup because they thought their skin would react.
So it is your vision for this new brand.
Makeup and skincare. The entire package. Products for every step in a woman's routine. We work with dermatologists to give it credibility and then launch the whole line at once.
I don't know. It still sounds risky. Why don't we start with one product and see how it sells?
We need to make a big swing. We haven't gotten where we are by playing it safe.
Estee narrows her eyes.
And what will you call it?
I'm not sure, but it will have a completely new name.
But I'm Estee Lauder. What if I want my name on it?
I'm Leonard Lauder, and I'm saying you can't.
Leonard's wife stumbles on the perfect name during a trip to Paris. She sees a beauty salon named Clinique Esthétique. Leonard likes the word Clinique. It sounds both fresh and scientific. Now begins the hard work of developing a whole new line of allergy-tested, fragrance-free products from scratch. The Lauders partner with one of the most renowned dermatologists in New York, Dr. Norman Ehrenreich. They decide to create a line that differentiates between four skin types: dry, dry combination, combination oily, and oily. Each skin type has its own recommended skincare and makeup products. To determine which of the four categories each customer falls into, customers answer questions about their hair color, frequency of breakouts, likelihood to burn versus tan in the sun, and so on. In an industry where most products are marketed as one size fits all, this level of personalization is a revolutionary concept. In his dermatology practice, Dr. Ehrenreich has pioneered a three-step skincare routine: cleanse, exfoliate, moisturize. He believes if clients follow this routine twice a day, they'll see fewer breakouts and develop glowing skin. This becomes the template for Clinique skincare. And it's a profitable one. Women will be prodded to buy three problem-solver products since they work best when used together. The development process also involves extensive allergy testing. If a product gets even one adverse reaction, the team goes back to the drawing board. But all this testing gets expensive, and that means Clinique needs to make a splash right out the gate. But it's so different from Estee Lauder that the marketing team can't follow their old playbook. They have to come up with something new. It's 1968, New York City, the Estee Lauder offices. Leonard Lauder sits with Carol Phillips, a former Vogue beauty editor he's recruited to help spearhead Clinique's rollout. The new brand is top secret. All meetings are held in a windowless room and referred to with the code name Miss Lauder to throw off any spies by making it sound like a line aimed at teenagers. The Lauders are determined to be the first to market with a high-end hypoallergenic line. They can't risk their competitors finding out, especially Charles Revson. On the coffee table are a bunch of packaging mock-ups, lipstick cases, compacts, bottles of skin cream. Phillips begins to explain.
I want to differentiate the skincare from the makeup. We've used this pale grayish green for the skincare line, and then for the makeup, a hint of the same color with this floral peach pattern. Look at those delicate vines. They remind me of a Japanese watercolor.
I like it. It's modern but feminine. Doesn't look medicinal or intimidating.
And this is my favorite.
Phillips holds up a lipstick.
A silver tube instead of the gold we usually use. And I think we should use this color scheme for the store counters as well. White with pops of silver. It will set Clinique apart from Estée Lauder.
What about the saleswomen? What will they wear? I want them to look knowledgeable, professional, informed. Our line is based in science.
Right, but it still has to be accessible. We don't want our customers to feel as if they're walking into a doctor's office. There has to be some glamour.
Come in.
Carol Boulanger, Lauder's lawyer, strides in. She's wearing a white dress that resembles a coat, with buttons down the front, and a slightly flared skirt. She hands Lauder a folder.
Hi, Leonard. You'll need to sign these documents.
Lauder stands up, excited.
Carol, your dress.
He turns to Phillips.
It's perfect.
Perfect? For what?
Perfect for the saleswomen at our new Clinique counters. Look how stylish it is. We can make the buttons silver to fit the color scheme.
Phillips gives the baffled Boulanger a once-over.
I like it. It's official, yet approachable.
Carol, you just saved the day.
Clinique launches in September 1968. And right on cue, Revlon announces they're developing their own allergy-tested line to debut in May 1969. It's called Etheria. Estée Lauder is not impressed.
Etheria? Ha! Reminds me of diphtheria. Nothing makes you feel beautiful like thinking about a severe infection.
The company has invested a lot of money in Clinique, and at first, the brand seems to be on a path to success. But then excitement and sales plateau. And it's up to Leonard Lauder to figure out why and fix it. Fast.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. We get support from Acura. The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
October 1968. New York City, Estée Lauder headquarters. Leonard Lauder and his lawyer, Carol Boulanger, confer in his office. Leonard is worried.
Revson is trying to shut Clinique out of stores we haven't even launched in yet.
How is he doing that?
He's using his relationships with the owners to get them to wait until Etheria launches. He doesn't want us to get the chance to establish our business first.
Boulanger purses her lips.
What's the update on the situation with iMagnon?
iMagnon is the top luxury specialty store in Southern California. They've turned us down for the Clinique rollout. I thought our relationship with them was strong, but Revson's is stronger. That damn yacht of his. It's how he woos all these bigwigs.
I know it's not ideal, but if they won't budge, we have other options in California.
Who? J.W. Robinson? They're not nearly as high-end.
But we could still do well there. Remember, it's not just Revlon's Etheria line we have to worry about. You know as well as I do that every other major brand is bound to launch their own hypoallergenic line soon.
I do enjoy being a trendsetter.
I understand you're concerned about California. But right now, our Clinique sales are highest in Chicago and Philadelphia. Let's be practical. Focus our efforts there.
I know. This whole time we've been looking at Clinique as part of Estee Lauder. And it is. But it's also not.
I'm confident in the brand. We've created something great. And everyone else will realize that too. It might just take some time.
Lauder sinks money into promoting Clinique in fashion-forward cities like New York and L.A., where Estee Lauder has always succeeded. But the brand doesn't come across as glamorous enough to really take off in these markets. Leonard is worried Clinique is becoming a money pit. By early 1969, Clinique is on life support, and Leonard is burning through the company's $10 million war chest. Now, there's barely $900,000 left. He tries to cut costs, but with Revlon's Etheria launch just around the corner, he can't afford to slash advertising for Clinique right now. And that leaves Leonard with just one choice. Good Friday, 1969. Leonard stands before his staff in a conference room, visibly upset.
As you all know, our Clinique launch has not gone as smoothly as we hoped. As a result, I've had to make the difficult decision to lay off 10% of our staff. I am truly sorry it came to this. You know you're all family to me, but if the company is to survive, we need to do this.
It's a dark time for Estee Lauder, and it will take years to make Clinique profitable. And while Estee Lauder flounders, a brilliant young copywriter for Revlon is about to make life even tougher. Manhattan, 1973. The Third Avenue office of advertising agency McCann Erickson. Eileen Speck, a 23-year-old copywriter, sits in a conference room. Around her, a handful of men twice her age drone on. She stares out the window, deep in thought, a pencil tucked neatly behind her ear. Speck is frustrated. Outside, the world is evolving. Women are speaking up, demanding equal rights and equal pay. But that's not happening here. An older male copywriter starts talking, snapping Speck out of her daze.
We need a new ad campaign for L'Oreal's preference hair color. I'm thinking something like this. We see a girl. Beautiful, of course. She's sitting by an open window, her perfect hair blowing in the breeze.
Before she can change her mind, Speck cuts him off.
But what is she doing besides looking beautiful?
The men in the room gape at her. Speck pushes on.
If she's sitting by the window, looking pretty and not even speaking, she's just an object. That's not who L'Oreal's customers are.
Since you're apparently the expert, tell me, who are their customers?
They're independent. I'm tired of all the campaigns that emphasize hair dye being natural. Like we should hide the fact that we use it for men. Like a dirty secret. L'Oreal customers want to own their beauty. I don't do my hair because it will make a man like me. I do my hair because I want to.
Ms. Speck, are you just complaining or do you actually have a pitch?
You want a pitch? Okay. How about this? L'Oreal. Because I'm worth it.
She falls back in her seat, arms crossed defiantly. The men nod and exchange smiles.
I use the most expensive hair color in the world, preference by L'Oreal. It's not that I care about money. It's that I care about my hair. It's not just the color. I expect great color. What's worth more to me is the way my hair feels. Smooth and silky, but with body. It feels good against my neck. Actually, I don't mind spending more for L'Oreal because I'm worth it.
Speck's idea, inspired by a moment of feminist frustration, becomes one of the best-known advertising slogans of all time. And customers love it. In the early years of the Because I'm Worth It campaign, women purchased L'Oreal products to dye their hair for the very first time. And not just young people on a whim, or older women looking to hide their gray. Women across demographics see changing their hair color as a kind of confidence boost. L'Oreal becomes a household name and rides this new wave to become a top player in the hair care industry. Next stop, makeup. By the mid-1970s, Estée Lauder has solved its Clinique problem. It's become the fastest-growing makeup brand in the United States, surpassing the original Estée Lauder brand and leaving Revlon in the dust. The key turned out to be the marketing approach. Eventually, the company figures out Clinique simply appeals to a different demographic. While Estée Lauder remains popular among women 40 and older, Clinique appeals to women in their 20s who can't afford Estée Lauder yet. By creating two markets, Leonard is replenishing the company coffers and building towards his dream of making Estée Lauder a multi-brand company. In 1975, Charles Revson dies of pancreatic cancer, and a successor takes over. While Revlon remains a force in the industry, the brand becomes synonymous with mass market, and by the 80s, it's suffering financial losses and a hostile takeover. But a new competitor is on the rise. L'Oreal is breaking into the luxury makeup business and planning to take down Estée Lauder, one lipstick at a time. On our next episode, Estée Lauder expands as a multi-brand company looking to lure every woman. But L'Oreal has a new weapon in its arsenal, the irresistible luxury of Lancôme. Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. From Wondery, this is episode 3 of Estée Lauder versus L'Oreal for Business Wars. A quick note about recreations you've been hearing. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said. Those scenes are dramatizations, but they're based on historical research. If you'd like to learn more about Estée Lauder, we recommend the book, The Company I Keep, My Life in Beauty by Leonard Lauder. I'm your host, David Brown. Aaron Connolly wrote this story, voice acting by Michelle Phillippe. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor, edited and produced by Emily Frost. Sound designed by Kyle Randall. Our associate producer is Kate Young. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.